Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey, cats and kittens, it's time for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable once again. And I, of course, am your groovy host, Big Daddy John Morgan Neal. And as always, the twisting the knobs and flipping the switches is the one and only Richard Yule. And as always, Jonathan Williams, our Bomb Beyond reporter at large. And this time, he's bringing us an interview with newly signed Global Force wrestler Kiera Hogan. And we will also be discussing SummerSlam and NXT TakeOver Brooklyn with Ray Garner. And finishing it all up, we will finally have our review and discussion of the 1981 Peter Falk movie, All the Marvels, about a female tag team and their manager working their way up the ranks. And we will discuss that with Jerry Chandler, the guy that suggested we do that next one in our movie reviews. And I think that's finally it. So, folks, sit back and give a listen.
Hello, Marvel Universe. The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
Hey, cats and kittens, this is your jolly host, John Morgan Neal, and we're going to discuss SummerSlam and NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, as, of course, that's one of the four big events of WWE schedule, and lots of stuff happened, so we figured we might need to discuss a little bit of that before we get into our main topic today. And we're welcoming my close personal friend, Mr. Ray Garner, who has got some comments and opinions on the show, no doubt. And, of course, as always, old Richard Yule, my broadcast partner and pal. And so sit back and give a listen. So, guys, I guess we'll start with TakeOver. Since it was first. What's everybody got to say about that?
I missed some of it, but I did catch a little bit of the end and some of the middle there. I guess we should report. I've heard Asuka's injured, correct?
Broken collarbone, yes. Yep. Right, so, collarbone.
So she did end up winning the match, but yes. It'll be interesting what they do from here. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's obviously up in the air, but it's a minor injury. She'll be back in a few weeks. And the next TakeOver show she'll be back before the next TakeOver show. So, you know, hopefully they won't do anything, you know, strip her the belt. There's no point in it. Unless they decide that's a good chance. Because I was saying the other night that my prediction was Asuka would retain and that she may eventually just vacate the title when she goes up. So never losing the title. This is another way you can do that and then open up and change things or whatever. So we'll see what creators, creative control behind there decides to do with this. But, you know, get well soon, Oscar.
That was one of the matches I saw, and it was good. I'm a really big fan of Ember Moon. I don't really know where she came from. I mean, I've seen her, obviously, on NXT and stuff.
She came from Booker T's school. Yeah, she's from Dallas, Texas, and she went down to Houston, and Booker T and Skandor Akbar and those guys trained her.
Cool. Yeah, she's great. I mean,
yeah,
great talent.
Yeah, she is.
She's basically my second favorite next to Asuka.
It's interesting. I have a friend named Glenn Davis who's part of the board. You know, hi, Glenn. We talk a lot of wrestling on, Facebook Messenger and so on and so forth. And he's not a big fan of Ember Moon. He thinks she's a Naomi light and that he doesn't believe the crowd really trust her, which is somewhat true. The crowd aren't really totally buying into Ember for whatever reason. They boot her. They're not completely embracing her, but that happens. I mean, hell, they've done it with Bayley now, so, you know.
I think the problem there is that she's taking on Asuka, who the NXT writing staff is trying to make heel, and
miserably. Yes, exactly. Everybody wants to cheer Asuka, and of course he's also, I mean, you know, and I meant to say that to Glenn, but he's a little bit biased in that, or not biased, but his experience, because he actually went to go see a live NXT show. He lives in California, where there's a lot of Asians, and he's, you know, knows a lot of Asians and worked, you know, and deals with a lot of Asians, a lot of Asian friends and girlfriends, so on and so forth. And he was there when the Asian, you know, very Asian heavy crowd that he was part of, or section he was part of, you know, loved them some Asuka and hated them some Ember. So it might be a little skewed.
To be fair, I'm not the biggest Asuka fan, as we know, and you loathe the fact that I'm not. Everybody's got that
about it. That and Renee Young.
No, right.
Well, you just don't like pretty girls, is that?
But I mean, you know, that's the thing about wrestling. Everybody can like who they want and pick who they want, and not everybody has the same opinions. It's kind of cool thing about wrestling.
I really don't want to delve into this because we got a lot of area to cover in a short period of time, but one day you're going to have to tell me more than just the butt move is why you don't like Asuka. Can't be the only reason, because Naomi has that too. Do you dislike Naomi?
Oh, I'm not a big Naomi fan at all.
Did you like the Junkyard Dog?
As a kid, I did, so maybe if I was a kid, I might have. I don't know what it is. And to be fair, I don't watch NXT on a weekly basis, so, I mean, I've only seen a handful of matches by her, but I don't think she's a bad wrestler. It's just one of those things where I feel a disconnect. I just don't see what everybody else sees.
I got
so
you.
Anyway.
Well, anyway, we'll discuss that more in detail later. But I guess one of the biggest stories coming out of the entire weekend was there was a heck of a lot of title changes, and it started on NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, where we first had the tag team titles finally dropped by the Authors of Pain to Sanity. But then immediately were attacked by the incoming, what are known as Red Dragon on the indie circuit. We'll get to be seeing what they're going to be called here, but of Bobby Fish and the other guy.
Kyle O'Reilly.
So very excellent introduction to them. And then, of course, later we had the world title change and the NXT world title change from Bobby Roode to Drew McIntyre, and then we had the introduction of Adam Cole.
Bay
so,
Bay.
Yeah, Bay Bay, and obviously they're going to be a faction, those three, and it'll be interesting to see, and kind of a resetting of things for NXT in a way. So that's all good. I was always a Drew McIntyre fan, so I'm happy to see him ascend to the top of something. I just wish he had his old entrance music. He had one of my favorite entrance songs of all time back then.
Yeah, it was great. It was mine, too.
Yeah. But anyway.
with Adam Cole and Bobby Fish and Kyle Riley, I just want to do a plug that you can go to our friends over at Figure Toys Company and buy their action figures right now. You don't have to wait a year like for the Mattel figures, so you can just buy their figures. They're all in the Ring of Honor set that they have, so it looks like NXT is becoming more like Ring of Honor Lite, or whatever you want to call it, than ever. But we kind of knew all this was happening. I mean, back in January when I went to the Ring of Honor show, Kyle Riley was supposed to be on that episode, or that taping, and that's when his contract kind of went out. And Bobby Fish has been on NXT, I think, already. And then Adam Cole's contract went out, I guess, a month and a half ago when they kicked him out of the Bullet Club. So, you know, that's when,
All right, Ray, got something to say?
Well, I'll say the only problem I kind of have with the setup is if they do not bring Authors of Pain and they do not bring Bobby Roode up to the main roster, it kind of leaves your now former champions on both categories kind of in a lurch.
True.
If there's left on NXT.
That's true. Because
I'd be shocked if Bobby Roode doesn't go, though. I mean, go get pulled up to the main roster.
Now, you know, after what happened with jumping ahead to SummerSlam for a second, with what happened with the U.S. title situation, and obviously building towards a Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon, that does leave the U.S. title challenger slot open. So, you know, it would be pretty cool if Roode shows up and challenges AJ for the U.S. title.
True.
And also, Jinder is now pretty much without an opponent.
That's true. So he could just go after Jinder. That's true. But I don't see him being a face, so at this point. So.
No. Roode is a terrible face.
He's a terrible face. He's just not, yeah. So I wanted to remain the heel, and that best foe for him there would be AJ. And side Shinsuke, I think, is... I don't think Shinsuke's empty. I think Shinsuke's going to continue feuding with Jinder, I think. But we'll see. All right. Any other thoughts, Ray?
All in all, it was a good show, but I do not think it stole the weekend like TakeOver has been known to do, though.
No, I don't. I agree. I totally agree. And I had a discussion with who wasn't on... One of the guys on the world-famous Pro Wrestling Roundtable Facebook page. Hashtag WCW, hashtag TBT. But anyway, because SummerSlam was good. Its lows were very low, which we know we already, you know, Rusev and is really the lowest part. I wouldn't even call the Corbin Cena match low. It just was not really pay-per-view big. It just was kind of there. But we had two fantastic tag team matches, two excellent female matches, an incredible main event, and a damn good U.S. title match. So really, not just even good matches, but some real interesting developments and interesting stuff happening. So, yeah, all in all, I was very happy with SummerSlam.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I did not see all of it. But I saw probably four of the main matches, but I thought it was great. Finn Balor's entrance was great. I love the fact that they incorporated Bray's. He's got the whole world in his hands in there.
Yeah.
Very cool. Of course, we kind of talked a little bit before about Bray just being buried, and, you know, they need to take him off TV and reboot him because he is going nowhere fast. I mean, he's been on the fast track to nowhere for a while, but, man, it is obvious. I mean, one of the bigger shows, I mean, just put him against an opponent that doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, just have him win. I can't even remember the last time he won on a pay-per-view. I mean, you know, his title run.
Well, he beat Randy Orton in the, you know, special House of Horrors match.
Yeah,
but that was hinky because it was Jinder and his lackeys that.
I mean, his title run just doesn't feel like it was even a title run at this point, and it was this year.
Yeah. I agree with you. He needs to be taken off TV. He wasn't on Raw Monday, and so maybe that's what they're doing, and we'll see. But, yeah, that's one unfortunate thing, though. The match was good. I mean, and like
great.
I said, the entrances were fantastic and all of that and the other. But, you know, a couple other negatives were, one, the very big mistake that they didn't open the doors early enough, and that Hardy Boys and Jason Jordan and Mr. Raj were playing to basically an empty house, and they were apparently incredibly furious about that. And actually, Miz put that in his fantastic freaking promo last night. That was part of one of the things he said. His famous line is like, I said, so this is what a sold out Barclays looked like. I wouldn't know.
That's great.
So anyway, yeah, that was just a real, you know, these are the kind of things that you when you hear about it, you know, if it's some freaking, you know, even ROH or TNA or whatever, you think, well, that kind of thing happens. But the WWE is supposed to be this machine of, and it's been doing this, you know, forever and ever and ever. You think, how does this kind of thing happen with these people? This shouldn't happen with WWE. You know, they're held to a higher standard. And that's just bad. And then the other thing was, my brain went blank. But there was another really hinky thing that...
Went blank?
Yeah, apparently so. They'll come back to me. I'll bring it up when it does. But
Well, let me jump on the pre-show here real quick while you're thinking.
That's it. That's it. Go ahead. I'll say that it's having the second or third best match on the freaking pre-show. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I would say basically probably the second and third best matches were on the pre-show, because I really enjoyed the Cruiserweight title, which...
That's true.
I mean, the NXT title is shown more respect, and it's on a different show. Mm-hmm. Why is the Cruiserweight title, once again, your opening match to a less than 10% crowd, when you got, you know, two guys out busting their ears to try to put on a great match and doing it to nobody?
Absolutely true. You're right.
They don't care about the Cruiserweight. I mean...
Well, apparently so, yeah. But then, you know, what about the freaking, you know... Raw tag team title, and then the SmackDown tag team title, the Usos and New Day busted their ass too. That was a fantastic freaking match. This classic tag team cut the ring in half type of thing, and some of the freaking different moves that they did I haven't seen ever before, like, you know, Xavier putting Big E on his shoulder and dropping him, you know, on Jimmy. I mean, just fantastic damn match, you know, and again, playing to a partially empty building and not on the main shows. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. But Rusev getting taken out with a single RKO made the main show.
Yes, and really, and I understand why Cena's on the main show, because he's Cena, but still, that was not a pay-per-view match.
I will say, though, that match accomplished the main thing that I really, and I'm going to sound horrible for this, but it hit me this weekend. Baron Corbin is my new Chris Masters. He is very limited in-ring talent. His charisma is that of a cardboard cutout. His look is horrible, and his character is terrible. He is the epitome of nothing to me.
Yeah, you know, I can't argue with any of that. I'm not really big on Corbin. I haven't been. I know that there were some people behind the scenes, but apparently I think that's past. I think Corbin is no longer the hot ticket.
I mean, I like Corbin more than some of the bigger guys that like big casts. Like, I think that he's useless, but so I'd put Corbin over him. But because to me, big cast is pretty much what you described. Since he's been on his single run.
I will not argue that at all.
No.
Yeah, I mean, but they're tall, big guys, and we know Vinnie Mac loves that. So, you know, it's the same reason that guitar playing guy does, you know, but at least he has
Elias,
a gimmick.
You know, I'm liking Elias.
Oh, he has a gimmick. I mean, at least he's got has
something.
That.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's got something, you know, yeah. And he can play the guitar. And
he's competent in the ring.
Yes, he is very competent in the ring. And he gets the crowd going. He gets heat because of, you know, his whole, you know, singing the song and telling them to shut up and wait for their applause. And I loved it Monday night. They started clapping along with the song, and he shut that shit down pretty quick, you know. And so, yeah, I'm liking Elias. But the only thing I don't like about Elias is because Vince McMahon has struck again and stolen the last name. He's no longer Elias Sampson. He's just Elias.
Oh, he's just Elias?
Yep.
I hate when they do that.
I hate it when they do that, too.
Cesaro, same way. He had a first name.
Rusev.
Yep. Rusev, yeah. Yep. I mean, they always do it.
They do it, yeah.
Well, so we should go to the main event, which...
Oh, God, yeah. Fantastic main
event. Yeah, I mean, you know, I told you, John, last night that it wasn't much of a wrestling match, but for these guys, it was the perfect match for all of them.
Well, it's interesting that you put it that way, and then last night when you did put it that way, because me and Ray kind of had that discussion the night of TakeOver, when, you know, it's kind of like the comparison of, say, you know, what Kevin Owens and AJ put on a pretty damn good match, and then you had Cesaro or the Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus and the two-thirds of the Shield, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins put on a fantastic
great match.
It's kind of like, you know, WrestleMania 3 with Steamboat and Savage getting, you know, the accolades for the great match, but really, honestly, the match that everybody will always remember is Hogan, you know, slamming Andre, and that's exactly the kind of comparison here. I mean, it wasn't meant to be a great match. We all knew these four freaking big son of a bitches were going to freaking slam into each other and cause havoc, and that's exactly what they did, and it was great.
Which is what made it a great match.
Yes.
It's not the work rate. Sometimes it is the big spots. It is the impact. It's the big sweaty guys.
Yeah, exactly.
The big they were all, you know, they all busted their ass. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, there's some pain out of there.
Oh, yeah. Strowman got hit with that.
As soon as Reigns hit him with that, I was like, oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
I knew he was going to get sliced with that.
He did. But yeah, and I think a real big story that comes out of this is, one, Roman Reigns was pinned straight clean in the middle of the ring. He's the one that ate the pin. I would have bet you every dime I've got, which ain't many, but every dime I've got, that Joe would have eaten the pin in between those four, but he didn't. It was Roman. Brock retaining, which I think a lot of people were not expecting.
I was shocked.
But I actually picked Brock. If Ray will back me up on this, because when Heyman said that he was going to be gone, I just don't think that Brock needs to go to do a UFC. He didn't do it last time, so I didn't think Brock was leaving like everybody was thinking he was. But
yeah,
nevertheless, go ahead, Ray.
I was going to say I was actually convinced that Brock was going to retain until they stretchered him out.
That's true. I did think, oh well, I'm wrong. You know,
I thought they were going to do an injury angle to explain why he didn't win.
Then when he
came back, I'm like, okay, he's winning this.
Yeah, he's totally winning. When he came back, I knew I was right. But for a moment, I thought I was wrong because he did card out. So
yeah, when he came back, I was like, oh, maybe he is going to
win. go ahead.
I'm going to say, but kudos to him because he sold the concept that he wasn't even close to 100% the whole rest of that match.
You know, Brock's not one of my very favorite of all time, and for whatever reasons, there's no dig against him because Hulk Hogan's not one of my favorite of all time, you know, and that's, you know, so, you know, Hulk Hogan's Hulk Hogan, but I can't take away from his ability. I mean, Brock could sell. He really can. And not all big guys can sell like that. He sells. He'll sell for the other guy, and I appreciate that, so. And he certainly did in this match, and that was part of what made it great. The other two stories, a little bit lesser story, is Joe certainly is definitely still being considered a major thing, which is great. He was purported as definitely an equal among these four, and that's great, the great thing. So, you know, Joe's train's keeping on running. But the biggest story has got to be the crowd reactions, continued reactions to Braun Strowman. He was definitely the babyface in this match. Totally the babyface in this match. The fans freaking you know, went ballistic on every freaking thing he did. They need to turn this guy yesterday, but don't change him. Don't turn him into a hand-slapping babyface. Just have him go against different opponents. And since they now have declared it is him and Brock at the next pay-per-view, then maybe this is starting to happen. So,
I mean, Strowman's amazing. I don't know why I like him so much, or the crowd, really, because I still think his look isn't the best. You know, he's got a kind of a baby face with a beard, and like his outfit isn't the best. He's just a monster. He sells everything so good. He sells the fact that he's a monster. He's confident. When he first started, he wasn't the best in the ring, but he has vastly improved, and he's just great.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think that the crowd is responding to this. He's given us something we haven't had for a long time. It's this truly dominant monster guy that, you know, that they have protected for the most part. And he does amazing, spectacular feats and over-the-top stuff, and the fans are eating it up, obviously. I'm eating it up. You're eating it up. I mean, it's just different. It's something that is fun. It's just fun, you know. And so, yeah, I'm happy about Strowman. I couldn't be happier. More power to him. And like I said, the only thing I see now is that unlike Bray, where they didn't flip him when they needed to, they need to slowly, or not even slowly, just all of a sudden he's fighting the guys that they have are more comfortable. Now, you know, having him go and destroy the Mr. Raj, you know?
Yeah. Well, instead, I mean, he's going to be the baby face of the Brock match, right? I mean, he's the one that everybody will cheer.
Pretty much the confrontation that they had in the ring where Braun just came in after, you know, Heyman was crowing about, you know, Brock winning and Brock looking, you know, very satisfied and smug. And Braun came out, didn't say a word, and just trashed him. So, yeah, I was the babyface in that match.
Well, I was going to say, you know, having seen Braun live at Great Balls of Fire.
Right, that's right.
I mean, he's just got a presence that is, you know, is fairly unique. I mean, Roman Reigns doesn't have that kind of presence when you're in person.
True.
Yeah, you know, I've seen them both, and he's just got a big sense. And but yeah, his look, his facial expression is the big teddy bear.
Yeah.
Which, if they make him into a big teddy bear, it will kill his momentum badly.
Oh yeah. No, he's got to continue being a badass monster that destroys everything in his path. Just put different things in his path. That's all. That's all you got to do. It's simple as that. Just put different things in front of his path. You put The Miz and Bo Dallas and Elias and people like that in front of him, then it's all good, you know. But don't have him go against Finn Balor. Don't have him go against, you know, guys that are over or in favors. You know, just simple as that. It's old, as old school as you can get. All right, go ahead, Richard.
Are you saying Bo Dallas isn't over?
I'm sadly, no. I love Bo, but no.
I do too.
I do call him now the half man gang. So.
Half man gang.
Okay. The one thing I do want to bring up before we continue on, though, Beach Balls.
Oh yeah, thank you for bringing that up, and thank you, Cesaro. I would have never guessed you could be a bigger hero to me than you already were, and you proved me wrong. I'm bowing to you now, Cesaro. Thank you very much.
Well, then you should be upset with Cena from what I've been hearing about Raw.
I am upset with Cena. I absolutely am.
What happened?
Cena basically encouraged it, said that it's just fun, and you know that same old spiel that he always does about the crowds, which I get to a degree, but, you know, sometimes he overdoes it, and I think he misses the point, and I think he really went against the boys on this one. And that is disrespectful. It, you know, when these guys are busting their ass in the ring for you to be having a little party outside, I don't like it. The boys don't like it, and obviously Cesaro don't like it.
Well, so the beach ball thing could drastically get out of hand because they're so easy to sneak in. So yeah. You could have 100 of those things going around eventually if it caught on, you know, which we see it every now and then. We've seen it at, was it WrestleMania? Because it was Beach Bowl Mania.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, every once in a while I think is okay, but you don't want to encourage it because I think it could way get out of hand.
Yeah. So, Ray, what do you want to say about it?
Well, I was going to say, it is... And I hate to take some of the internet guys silent, but it is a crowd making themselves more important than the guys who are taking the bumps in the ring.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's wrong.
Right. That is totally wrong.
But in the other side of it, like if I was there, if I paid money, it is what it is. Like, but I get it. I mean, I think it's disrespectful.
But here's the deal. It's not just the fan. It's not just the boys who don't like it. When Cesaro busted that ball, by the way, with bare hands, and I couldn't imagine doing
that.
Oh,
he just smashed it.
Oh, man, just effortlessly.
He grabbed it, popped it, and started ripping it apart.
Yes, exactly. And so anyway, that got a huge freaking ovation and cheer. So it is a minority of fans that think this is okay. You know, I don't, most of them obviously agree with us and,
yeah, like, part of me knows that Cesaro did it for heat, and he ended up getting cheered. So it was one of those things where if he had gotten booed, it would have been much better because he's a heel, and that's what should have happened. They should have booed him. But yeah, it was just one of those things that he's just so freaking cool, and Sheamus and Cesaro are just cool. It's every example that you've given last night in our conversation, John. It's the matching outfits. Yep. It's that they're a true tag team. Yeah, yep. They don't have a cool name together, but I mean,
yeah, they do. They are.
Well, but they don't. They're not known by that.
That's the fault of WWE. But that's the reason why I continually refer to them as the Bar. They call themselves the Bar. It's on the back of their freaking trunks. You know, even their trunks are indicative of it because they got the gold bar on the top of them.
Yeah.
They are the Bar, you know.
And they are,
along with the Usos, absolutely the two best tag teams going right now, with the Hardys right there with them, you know, because they're the Hardys. But
I have to admit, I love seeing Seth and Dean back together, though. So I think they'll be a great babyface team, even though like I didn't really want them to win. As far as the belts, they needed them, and Cesaro and Sheamus does not need them.
No, they don't.
So, I love the fact that Cesaro wears a kilt, by the way. I don't know.
They both of them,
like,
do.
Both of them, yeah. Like, yeah. Like they both match now. Like,
and I love
they...
their military jackets, which are some kind of European, EU force or something like that. So, I don't know exactly what it is. Some kind of military in Europe, but yeah, I just love everything about Sheamus and Cesaro. Love and what they're doing with their tag. They have obviously dedicated themselves to being a tag team. That is their priority. That is what they are. And their whole work together has been fantastic, which, you know, it's kind of new for Sheamus. He's never been part of an actual dedicated tag team, but, of course, Cesaro was in the Indies.
And with Tyson.
I mean. And then with Tyson, you know. So I guess Cesaro really is more of a tag team guy, even though he could be great at singles, but he's a great tag team guy.
Sure.
Right? What you got to say about the Bar?
Oh, I've actually been very impressed with them because I thought it was a horrible idea when they stuck them together and they were doing a storyline where they didn't like each other.
Yes.
And as they have grown as a tag team, I have grown to really enjoy them.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And one of the best entrances going too, by the way.
Yes. And that. But now, we haven't talked about the WWE main event from SmackDown, the title.
It's true. Gender retaining, which, again, I mentioned on the board when April mentioned that she didn't like the ending, obviously because of her little weirdo losing. When I realized that the India tour is still on the docket, I realized gender ain't losing that title. So
I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I hate the fact, though, it is literally the same way he won, like, half his matches are more with Randy Orton.
Exactly. The ending was terrible. It was they need to figure some other different ways for him to retain. And
how about just winning?
Not against Shinsuke. I wouldn't want that.
Well, I could even go with it that the, you know, him cheating to set it up. Him even poke Shinsuke in the eye to set it up.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
Referee is throwing the Singh brothers out and he racks him.
Right, yeah, there you go. That works. As long as it's Hinky to some degree with somebody like Shinsuke, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But yeah, no, the ginger train keeps rolling. It's fine. I think he's doing a good job as a heel guy. He's getting a lot of heat. He's getting a lot of money when they go to India. And then they can change things up after that. So what do you think, Richard?
That was one of the matches I did not see. I did see, actually, I had clicked on, it was running on the WWE Network. And when I clicked on, it was Shinsuke in the middle of the ring, like, and Jinder winning. So I didn't really see the match, so I don't really comment on that. I like Jinder, though. I hate that the fact that, in you know, the India tour is, like, probably a reason that he has the belt. I hate that that's a thing. Like, I just wish, I mean, because he makes a good champion. He's a hell of a heel.
Well, I think that was the original idea, and certainly, obviously, still a main part of it. But I think that he certainly proved himself, and I think that shows to the guys in the back. I'm sure you asked Michael Hayes or Road Dogg, and they're behind him 100%. I guarantee it, because he has embraced this role, and he has done a great job of putting across what he is, the Maharasha, and the whole thing. It works. You know, and so there you go.
Well, I was going to say, he is the guy that, you know, so many guys are given the ball and the opportunity, and they squander it. They play it safe. Jinder is just going all out.
Balls the wall.
To try to make it.
Absolutely. Good for him. And he has got a great look. And I love the Singh brothers as the toadies. It just works for me.
They take stupid hits. I mean, they.
Oh, my God. Those guys, I hope they're getting bonus pay. Because they are freaking busting their ass, taking some really heavy bumps. Natalie Neidhart wins the title after a 6-year drought. I do believe this is sort of a, what do they call that, a career trophy. Because she now has, basically, I just heard today that she has been that more pay-per-views for WWE than any female star in history.
No. She's tied with Trish. She has not broke the record.
Oh, okay. Well,
they announced it actually on the pay-per-view.
Oh, did they? I didn't catch that. So anyway, she's on the cusp of becoming the, because obviously she's going to be at the next one. So, kind of sad to see the Glow go, because I really liked her entrance with the belt and everything, so on and so forth. But I'm never going to be down on Natalie winning the title. I didn't expect her to win it. I never would have bet on it. But they did it, and I'm all for it. So good for Natalie. And she's doing a good job as a heel. She's really becoming a good heel. So,
yeah, I've been a big fan of Natalie, and I agree that this is probably she's probably, by the end of the year, she may not be a in-ring performer.
No, she'll be working either at the Performance Center or as an agent behind the scenes. Probably an agent, because she's working with the girls, you know. She'll be still working with the girls that she was working with in the ring, and she'll still be traveling with them, and I think she'd like that, but we'll see. Yeah. But though, she certainly could help train some youngies, so.
I'm also going to say, I think that she also may be a transitional champion, because I really do think they want Charlotte to win that belt.
Oh, yeah.
But Charlotte being a face.
Oh, yeah.
She needs to go against Hill, and she could not go up against Naomi.
Oh, so. Give me a break. When Ric Flair fully recovers and Charlotte returns and announces the news, she's going to be hugely over, and she would be perfectly positioned to go against Natty, say, at the Royal Rumble, and winning her title back, or winning this title back, or getting it for the first time, whatever you want to look at it. And it'll be a very happy moment for everybody. Right. Maybe Ric Flair there. Maybe Ric Flair actually there ringside crying.
And her and Natalie have had really good matches in the past.
Oh, right? Her and Natalie are a great matchup. They're fantastic together. And Natty and her put on a great show, and it was a good match. And the Raw SmackDown title was excellent match as well. those two seem to have a better chemistry than Alexa and Bayley have for some reason. And Sasha wins it for her fourth time. As I said to Ray, I said that one more and she can start using Booker's line, you know, five times. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Sasha, so I'm happy to see that. I'm a big fan of Alexa, too, and I don't think she's finished being, you know, the goddess, so good stuff.
Yeah.
So we need to wrap it up, but I can't leave here without complaining about Corey Graves. I've not been high on him as an announcer since he's gone to the main show.
Yeah, he pissed you off at the end, didn't he?
I mean, especially with Brock winning, and you call him lucky? He got smashed through two tables, got a table landed on top of him, came back. I mean, what an idiot. Like, even Cole tried to, like, spin it a little bit. I mean, but my gosh, just buried him in 2 seconds, just took everything. I mean, he should have been building him up. Like, my gosh, look at this monster.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could have even said, you know, you want to call Braun Strowman the monster, man? Brock Lesnar is the monster here tonight.
Right.
But.
But yeah, I can't argue with that, and I can't even say because the commentary is a mess on Raw particularly. It's not much better on SmackDown, but it's somewhat better, and NXT is way better. But they just cannot make up their mind about what, you know, whose role is what, because him and Booker keep switching roles in certain matches about who, you know, we're healing up on the guy, you know, on the baby faces.
They need to go back to a two-man booth.
They do.
Oh, badly.
Have your play-by-play guy who is almost always for the faces, and your color guy is for the heels.
Right. I mean, because if it was clear that Corey is supposed to be the heel color guy, and Brock is supposed to be the babyface.
Yes,
and
that's the only way it would work.
Yes, that's where that works, but it didn't work there because... Yeah,
I mean, so Brock is a heel. I mean, that's the way he's been. I mean, fans love him in a way, but he's still always a heel.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, so, that was funny enough, in a way, that was a match of all heels.
I mean, yeah.
Well, the only technical baby face is Roman Reigns that the crowd has rejected.
Oh, crowd hates him more than the heels.
So I just say, yeah, he got more boos than anybody. So, yeah, that was a – everybody there gets boos except for Braun's supposed to get boos. He gets cheers. So there you go.
Joe gets his chant.
Joe gets what?
Joe gets that chant that he gets.
Oh, yeah, the Joe. Yeah, Joe's going to kill you. By the way, beautiful, beautiful way that they matched up Joe with Miz. And that scene in the back scene, I don't know if y'all seen Raw or not, but there's a scene in the back where Miz is like, you know, doing his thing and he's running his mouth and Joe's just sitting there with his towel around his neck, just looking sour faced as always. And then, you know, finally he's had enough of Miz and he says, "Shut up." And Miz is like, "Ugh." And he says, "Here's how it's going to go." And he lays out exactly what they're going to do in the main event. And then they're in Miz and Bo and Curtis are all like, "Okay." Okay, well, anyway, I guess that'll do for now. Unfortunately, we only have so much time. We got another part of two parts of the show to do, so we will say goodbye to Ray for now, but he will be coming back in our special show on New Japan since he was actually there at the G1 Climax, and we will pick his brain about the experience there and actually seeing all that stuff live, and until then, we say goodbye.
Thank you, y'all.
Previously on Podcasserole. Glomer is one of the most underrated cartoon characters of all time.
Some call Glomer the Jar Jar of the PBU, you know. I haven't stepped foot inside of a Subway since, really.
And neither is Jared.
It's true.
You're over at my home every every week. Is there a meth lab here?
Not a big one.
I choose him, the one called Kirk. I'm freaking James T. Kirk.
Find out more about Podcasterole now on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. And don't forget AdamandJP.com and the ESO Network.
Welcome back to the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and with us tonight we have a very special guest. We have wrestler Kiera Hogan, and as always, Jonathan got us the interview, so take it away, Jonathan.
All right, well, Kiera, of course, I've seen you around a lot in the Atlanta area and throughout Georgia over the past few years, but a lot of our listeners are probably not as familiar with you as I am, so I guess we'll just kind of start from the beginning and talk about where you trained. I know you trained at WWA 4, I guess, with Mr. Hughes. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that where you started? And then you started training with Murder One at Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment?
That's not exactly true. I was trained by Curtis Hughes. That's my trainer. Murder One, I'm actually friends with as a part of AWE. He has helped me a lot along the way, but Curtis Hughes is my official trainer.
Okay, so when did you start training with him?
So I was 19 when I started training. I went up to WWA 4 because I wanted to, of course, be a pro wrestler. But Mr. Hughes thought it would be, you know, reasonable for me as the only girl there at the time to be the backstage interviewer. So I was the backstage interviewer and announcer for about a year, and then Mr. Hughes found out that I wanted to train, so he told me, you know, get your shoes one day and get in the ring, and for a whole year I was just training and interviewing and still announcing and managing. So I was training all of 2014, and then I had my debut April 2015.
Oh, so that's still very recent.
Yes.
Okay, so I know, or from what I've heard, he has left WWA 4. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And who is running that school now?
AR Fox is the head trainer at WWA 4 now.
Okay, and you still train there and wrestle there? Do they still do the shows every Thursday?
They still do the shows every Thursday. I'm no longer at WWA 4. I follow Hughes to his new wrestling school, or the one he's a part of, Face to Face Wrestling, which is founded by Heath Slater, also under Teddy Long, Ron Simmons, Jazz, and Mr. Hughes. So I'm now part of Face-to-Face Wrestling as an assistant trainer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Where is that? Do they have a website?
Yes, facetofacewrestling.com. It's based out of Atlanta, Georgia, on Atlanta Industrial Highway. It's about 10-15 minutes from where WWA 4 used to be. I am aware that WWA 4 did move facilities. I'm not sure where. So we are down the street from where WWA 4 used to be. But yeah, we're based out of Atlanta, just like WWA 4.
And, you know, for almost that same amount of time, you've been part of Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. Was there anything in between those two, or did you just go straight from WWE 4 and that kind of became your primary promotion, at least locally, that you work for?
Yes, AWE is like my home base. It's the promotion that gave me my first indie match, and I've been with them for 3 years through interviewing and managing and now wrestling. So I've been with them for 3 years now, and that is my home base.
So how did you get involved with AWE?
So at the time, I was still training, but I was interviewing and announcing, and I got in contact with Josh Wheeler, who is the promoter for AWE, and he asked if I wanted to be a part of this new promotion. Of course, I said yes. The first show I did, I did a couple of backstage interviews, and I interviewed Jimmy Rave in the ring. And the next show I ended up managing, I managed for about a year, maybe a little less than a year, and Josh heard that I was training, and he asked if, you know, I wanted to have my debut at AWE, and I was like, of course, like, I've been with them for a whole year, so I had my debut match with them, and for the past 3 years, I've been wrestling some of the top indie women, top women in this industry now, Heidi Lovelace, who is now Ruby Riott, Kimberly, who's now Abby Leif, I believe her last name is. Taylor Hendricks, Sue Young, Eva Lees, Marty Bell. I've had a lot of experience with AWA and, of course, helping to build their women's division, which is Roar. I was in the second or third, maybe fourth match of Roar had ever had. So I've also been a part of Roar since pretty much the beginning. But, yeah, I've been with AWA since their very first show.
And where else have you wrestled? I know Priscilla Kelly has been like your main rival in AWE, and she, of course, recently, you know, where does she want a title? I forget which promotion right now.
Shine Wrestling.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So have you done any work for any of those other promotions like that, or just any other indies throughout the Southeast or anything?
Yes, I've worked for Shine. I'm a regular at Shine now as part of the faction, the Cutie Pie Club, with me, Candy Cartwright, and Aria Blake. I'm also the WSU Spirit Champion of WSU, which is the sister promotion to CCW up in Voorhees, New Jersey. I worked Shimmer one time, but I'm hoping to go back. But I've also worked for PWX. I've worked for Omega that one time that I did Omega. I've also done Reality of Wrestling, which is Booker T's promotion down in Houston, Texas, a couple of times. I've been a few places. I've worked for ECWA. I did the Women's Super 8 last year. So I've pretty much been up and down the East Coast for the past 2 years.
When you were on my old podcast a couple of years ago, you mentioned that because you were the only girl at your school for a while, that you mostly wrestled guys to begin with. And I think primarily you mainly wrestled your boyfriend, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how does it compare, you know, especially now that you're out wrestling other women who've trained from various different places, how did that compare wrestling men and wrestling experienced female wrestlers?
It's definitely different. Women and men are different, obviously. Men wrestling women, it's a different kind of story, I guess. When you wrestle a guy, they pretty much lead the way. They kind of give you a lot of leeway to do a lot of cool things. And, you know, you can kind of think out of the box when you wrestle a guy as a woman. But when you wrestle a woman, it's pretty much a better size difference, like a better size ratio, I would say. So you're kind of based more, I think, more grounded, unless, you know, you have girls like Kaylee Ray and Mia Yim, Candice LeRae, who will give it to a man or give it to a woman. And I just feel like it's different. I mean, I like to wrestle pretty much anybody because everybody is a different challenge. So I would say it's definitely different, but I enjoy wrestling both. Like, I have no problem wrestling a man or a woman. But I definitely, now being a big part of, like, the independent scene, I guess you could say, I would rather wrestle a woman. That way I can get the experience wrestling women, because at the end of the day, the goal is to just be wrestling women.
Right. So, let's talk about who's your opponent on the 28th. I know this is at Opera Nightclub, which is a big venue. I think AWE's done one other show there before. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, well, tell me about this. Tell us about this event and who you're wrestling and, you know, what's why it's so important that you're doing this at this particular venue.
Okay. Well, it's actually the third event. I just thought about it. It's the third event that we're having at Opera. Opera's a huge, huge venue. It's a very nice venue. I love wrestling at Opera. It's kind of like Fight Club. Like the fans stand around the ring. It's kind of got that PWG feel. So it's kind of got that like underground, like Fight Club feel to it, because everybody's really close. It's very intimate. I love wrestling at shows where I can be intimate with the fans, so fans can really see and kind of get the full experience and the full emotion. So Opera is one of my favorite places to wrestle, honestly. But this is our third event. We had Show of the Year last year, which I wrestled Eva Lees. And we also had another event. I can't think of it, but it was our first event at Opera. So this Monday, I will be wrestling Mickey Knuckles. I'm very excited and very scared. But this is my second time, well, third time working with Mickey, and I'm really excited to be working with her again. This will be a real test, because I know how much of a hard ass she is. So I'm really excited to wrestle her. But the whole show is pretty much paying homage to GLOW, if you've seen the posters, kind of paying homage to GLOW. GLOW, the Netflix show, has become a really big thing right now. So we're kind of paying homage. I'm sorry, I keep saying that word. To GLOW, and of course the women's wrestling, the Mae Young Classic, is the same night. They're premiering their first 4 episodes that night. So there's a lot of great women's wrestling going on that night. And our card's stacked. We have Eva Lise, Thunder Rosa, Isla Dawn, of course Priscilla Kelly, Leva Bates, Amanda Rodriguez will be there. So we have a pretty stacked card. I'm really excited to see the entire show. But, yeah, I'll be wrestling Mickey Knuckles, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, good luck with that. I've seen her a couple of times, and I certainly wouldn't want to wrestle her.
Thanks.
And then I guess Dragon Con is your next match after that, right?
Yes.
So do you know? I know that's often kind of booked on the fly
Yeah.
Do you know who you're wrestling or anything yet for that?
I have no idea. I do know it's a lot of girls based out of Georgia that will be there. I was on Dragon Con last year. I was in the AWE showcase match. It was me and Owen Knight versus Murder One and Chip Day. And I was the only female that wrestled on the show last year. So I was pretty excited about that. And Xavier Woods was in attendance, so he got to see it and he really enjoyed it. So I'm glad that they asked me to be a part of it. Official part of like their women's roster for Dragon Con. So I think it's going to be some kind of multi-woman match because right now I think it's like 6 girls booked, but yeah, we have no idea what we're doing yet.
Well, of course, Dragon Con, you know, costumes are a big part of it. And I know I've seen you do a little bit of that, playing up the Girl on Fire thing and all that at MCW. Specifically, do you have any plans to do anything like that at Dragon Con?
I would love to. I just don't have any ideas yet. I did a live stream on Instagram the other day and somebody was saying like you can do like Kim Possible, or I had that like I don't know if you saw my hair maybe a couple weeks or so ago. My hair had like yellow in it. And a lot of people were saying I could cosplay Starfire from Teen Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was thinking about doing that, but I don't really know. I haven't really thought about it yet, but I probably should because, you know, that's next week.
Yeah. And then just coincidentally, I was asking you to do an interview, and then I think that same day or the next day I saw that you've apparently signed with Global Force Wrestling, right?
Yes, I did.
So how did they find out about you? How'd that all come about?
So from what I was told, they saw me wrestle at Shine, because you know they're based in Orlando. Shine is based in Tampa, well in Ybor City. So they saw me wrestle at Shine, and I also met Gail Kim at AIW Girls Night Out 19, I believe. She said she didn't see my match, but she heard really good things about me, and she saw my match at Shine. So I got in contact to sign maybe a few months ago, but you know, I had to keep it under wraps and they of course finally announced it. But I'm really excited. I just can't believe like I'm a knockout now. I remember watching Impact Wrestling in like 2007. Like I just remember watching it and like, I thought the knockouts were so different. Everybody had a different look. Everybody had a different persona. Nobody was so cookie cutter. Everybody had something different about them. There were different characters and personalities. And it was a breath of fresh air coming from like the divas at the time were so like cookie cutter. Everybody kind of had the same thing. Everybody looked like a supermodel. I'm not saying that they weren't amazing wrestlers, but you know, the knockouts were so different, especially because the division was still so new. So I was like, oh, I want to be a knockout. You know, these girls are tough. They jump off ladders and they do all this other stuff. So I was like, I want to be a knockout. And to come today, like if I would have told myself like 5 years ago that I would have signed and become a TNA knockout, I would not believe anybody that told me that. But the fact that I get to one wrestle on TV, but of course live my dream and actually become a knockout or sign a contract to a major company, it's a whirlwind at this point.
Yeah, do you have any idea when you'll actually make your television debut?
I'm not sure yet, but you'll just have to keep an eye out.
Well, I watch it. I DVR it, and you watch it usually the next day or that weekend. So I'll find out. I'll probably see it on Facebook before I actually see it on TV.
Right, you find everything out on Facebook first.
Yeah.
Are there any knockouts that you're looking forward to competing with?
Sienna, Rosemary are two of the tops. Oh, Rosemary, I would love to wrestle both of them. I love Rosemary's character. Like, even before I signed, the Decay was, like, one of the things that kind of drew me back into Impact. And, of course, the Hardy Boys, like, Broken Matt Hardy and, you know, Brother Nero, that whole like storyline was amazing. Like, it was so new, and it brought people back to like actual storytelling, I feel, and like real story, and especially in Impact, but in wrestling, I was really drawn to that like storyline. But I'm really excited to wrestle all of the girls because, I mean, like I said, I just can't believe that I'm a part of the roster. So I want to be able to compete with everybody, get to know everybody. Like I said, different challenges are, like, I feel helps a person grow and learn. And, of course, to be wrestling on TV, I'll be learning a lot more, especially with this platform. So I'm just excited to be a part of the actual company and the roster and to be able to wrestle anybody. But I think Rosemary and Sienna are two of them that I'm really excited about. I really wish I could wrestle Gail Kim, but, you know, she's about to retire, so that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, do you have any other questions for Kira?
I don't think so. That's great you got to sign with GFW. We're very excited to see you on television. And will you still be able to do your independent wrestling as well with the GFW contract?
As far as I know, yes. I have not been told I can't.
Cool.
Of course, their dates will obviously come first, but as of right now, I'm still on the independent scene.
That's cool. So people will be able to get a chance to see, I'm sure, in Atlanta as well as Orlando.
Yes.
And everywhere.
And everywhere, yeah.
Do you know, do you have any other upcoming shows that we haven't mentioned that you want to mention?
I will be going to South America September 2nd. I'm going to Guyana for a wrestling show I'm very excited about. It's another very stacked card. Yes, yes. It's my first time going out of the country, so I'm really excited. I get to use my passport. So September 2nd, I will be in Guyana for a show. Chris Masters is on the card. Sumi Sakai. Like, it's a pretty good like card for that show. I will also be at Shine September 15th, which is the day before my birthday. I'll be 23 years old, so I'm really excited. I get to wrestle the day before my birthday. And then I have Mucha Lucha October 8th. I'll be in a triple threat with my rivalry for life, Priscilla Kelly and Camilla Kane will be in a triple threat match. And I will also be at WSU for the Kings and Queens of the Ring tournament for WSU on September 9th. So I have a lot of things coming up. I'll be traveling a lot, so I'm really excited.
Where is WSU based?
Voorhees, New Jersey.
Okay.
Up near Philadelphia.
Yeah, sounds like you're very busy.
Yes, I'm trying to stay busy.
That's great.
Well, hey. Mucha Lucha is a fun thing. Tell people about that.
Well, Mucha Lucha has been around for a couple of years. Again, I was the first girl to be on that show. I wrestled one night, of course. This was like when I was still like in my first year of wrestling. The show literally has over 1,000 people come to it. And the whole experience of the show is amazing. Like, it feels like a NXT house show. That's what it feels like. It's the atmosphere of it is a lucha style wrestling. It's, you know, it's Hispanic based. So of course, because it's called Lucha Lucha. So it's a lot of Lucha Underground workers. We've had Pentagon Jr., Phoenix, Taya Valkyrie. We've had a lot of people come and Mr. 450. Like we've had a lot of people at Lucha Lucha wrestle there. But it's a huge show, and where I know the promoter Ricardo is expecting a lot more people every time the show runs. It runs every few months, so it gives people a chance to like a reason to come back because it runs every couple of months, but it's in a really good time space. So every time he runs, he gets more and more people to come. I think the last show drew like 1,200 people. So it's a really, really big show in Georgia.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun, and especially if you don't speak Spanish, because the whole show is pretty much in Spanish and it's just like culture shock. And it's a very different environment. They have like clowns and all kinds of stuff before the show. Mm-hmm. Like you get there on time and you get like an hour of non-wrestling, just wackiness. And there's a bunch of vendors and a bunch of really good food that's not expensive. And then of course, yeah, they have, like LA Parka was there one time. They have a lot of big lucha names. Lince Dorado wrestled there a lot before he signed with WWE. I don't know if he's still in WWE. I haven't seen him in a while, but a lot of the people there are big names in that scene, I guess, in the luchador circuit. So yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw you there. I think I was at that one. I haven't been to all of them, but they're always fun.
Yeah, I love Mucha Lucha. Like, I did a promo. I was involved in, like, this promo. It was Taya, 450, Pentagon Jr., Phoenix, and I can't remember. It was somebody else. And literally everybody spoke Spanish but me. So I stood there, and I'm just like, what are they talking about? Like, what do I do? I couldn't figure out what to do. And, like, Taya speaks English. She's from Canada, but, like, she knows Spanish, so she can speak both. So I'm literally just sitting there like, yeah, go get him or, you know, whatever. But I couldn't understand anything. It was so funny. And all the fans were like, we could tell, like, you had no idea what they were talking about.
So do you have a website or social media outlets or presence that you want to let people know about?
Of course. I'm on Facebook. I have a personal and private page, like my friends and stuff. They're both Kier Hogan. Please like my fan page. I'm on Instagram at Hogan Knows Best 18, which will probably be changing sometime soon. But for right now, it's Hogan Knows Best 18. I have a Twitter, Hogan Knows Best 3, which again will probably be changing sometime soon. I'm also on Snapchat as Hogan K3. And yeah, that's about it.
And then of course, your home promotion, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, is ATLWrestlingENT.com. Mm-hmm. Mucha Lucha that we just mentioned is MuchaLuchaATL.com. Mm-hmm. And Dragon Con wrestling information can be found at DragonCon.org. I don't know if any of the other promotions you've mentioned, if you know the websites or anything. You mentioned a lot though.
Right.
The one where where you hold a title, what's that one? WSU.
WSU, yeah, they have an Instagram, WSU Wrestling, and they also have a Twitter. I'm not entirely sure what the Twitter is, but it's something along the lines of WSU Wrestling. I know Shine has a Facebook, but you can also follow anything WWN, which is what Shine is a part of. You know, FIP, Evolve, Shine, ACW, everything WWN is at WWN Live on Twitter. And of course, follow Flow Slam, which is where Shine streams on Flow Slam. It's a really good program to be streamed from. It's a good subscription service for like all kinds of sports, but of course, WWN wrestling. So follow Flow Slam on Twitter. And of course, I all of my WSU matches are streamed on the Women's Wrestling Network. Also a subscription service out of High Spots. So it's kind of like the High Spots Network. It's just the women's version. So it's all women's matches, Queens of Combat, WSU, Girl Fight, all those promotions. And, of course, they have, like, XWX and stuff. So yeah, those are where you can find a lot of my matches. And of course I have a YouTube channel. Don't judge me. It's Mickey James Fan 94. Okay. I made it when I was in high school. So it's still that. Don't judge me.
I post
a lot of
I thought Richard was going to be about that.
Oh, don't judge me. I post a lot of my matches on there. I post a couple of my AWE matches on there, but of course, like, you can just look here, Hogan Up, and find, you know, all kinds of stuff about me on YouTube.
All right. Well, I will see you at Dragon Con for sure. I'm going to try to make it to Monday Night Roar. And otherwise, I'm sure I'll run into you at some point or be watching you on TV soon.
Yes.
Yeah, I will catch you at on Impact on my television. So congratulations
again.
We'll
see you there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kiara, for coming on again. And congrats to everything going on in your wrestling life.
Thank you so much.
Can you dig it, sucker? Sucker!
Hey kids, can't get enough of your plain old fidget spinner? Well, fear not. You can now have five times the fun with Booker T's brand new fidget spinneroo. Now, can you spin that sucker? It's available at all local Vinnie Max novelty stores. So hurry up and get yours soon before they all sell out.
Harry Sears is a self-made showman.
I've got two of the most sensational kids to ever hit this business.
With a traveling act that hits the road every day.
Why are we doing all the pushing when we're paying all the bills?
And opens every night.
What a fantastic show you girls put on tonight.
He's got taste. He's got patience.
All right, that makes 30. There's your 5 cents. I have no pennies. I'll have to go inside. I'll wait.
He's got clout.
You can't be nice to these things. They only understand one thing.
And he's got respect. Wow! He's going from the bottom of the barrel.
Stick with me and I'll have your name up in lights.
Reno.
To the top of the heap. And he's taking his boys along with him.
The California Dome!
MGM presents Peter Falk.
That's right!
Vicki Frederick. And Laureen Landon. In All the Marvels.
If I had a thought, an idea for you girls, that it could be sensational.
We are not getting tattooed, Harry.
Harry and the girls have been through the ropes. And back.
There's no bones broken, just maybe a bad sprain. Stay off your back for a few days.
Here goes your social life.
They've taken their lumps.
You weren't a good manager, Harry. Just a lousy human being.
The hard knocks.
I'm not turning myself into a sideshow freak for you or anybody else.
No way.
And the mudslinging.
You're a lousy lover. You're a lousy manager.
Now that really hurts. I am not a lousy manager.
But they've always come back for more.
Now the girls are a class act. They deserve to get paid.
If I wanted a class act, they get the Bronte sisters.
My dolls would tear their legs off.
They've got grit. Guts. Class. And style.
You are the champions. And the California Dolls are greedy for your title. So remember, pride.
And tonight, they're going for all the marbles.
Win or lose, I love you both, but we come too far to lose.
Hey, Cassie Kittens, this is John Neal, your wonderful, handsome, and bellicose host. And we are now at the main event, where I will be joined again by Richard Yule. my right-hand man, and Jerry Chandler, our frequent partner, who is part of the team, but is a not always available, but we always like to get him when he is, and this is something that me and Jerry have been wanting to do for quite a while. We are going to have a conversation about the 1981 movie All the Marbles, starring Peter Falk and a couple of lovely ladies and some other lovely ladies and tatas and mud wrestling and... Yeah. Anyway, I got lost myself there for a second. But anyway, it's...
Sounds like you're talking about the Attitude Era, but okay.
It was before the Attitude Era. They stole it from this movie. But yes, yeah, so yeah, we're going to talk about All the Marbles, a movie about a female tag team and their manager as they are struggling up the path to try to become a success. And so that's what we're going to do.
Shockingly enough, I had never heard of this movie before Jerry brought it up, but that's probably because I was three when it came out. Wasn't in my wrestling repertoire yet.
Well, that's that is excusable.
So how did you guys come about it? Like, because you all, you both have obviously known about it for a while, and me and Jonathan had never heard of it. So,
I don't exactly remember. I'm going to say that I got the VHS, rented it, you know, from kids. There used to be things called VHSs, which were tapes that had movies on them, and they had these stores that were everywhere that you can go and rent them. For a couple of nights.
You have to leave your house, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to leave your house
and go to this, you know. Shelves as far as the eye can see.
Oh, yeah. You can get
of things like Deathstalker.
Yeah.
Full Moon Productions.
Pretty sure. Oh, yes, Full Moon.
That I run across this and I saw, you know, the title, and I love Peter Falk, and he's sitting there with two very good looking brunette and blonde, and it's obviously about wrestling, and of course, I'm all about wrestling, so I said, well, I'll spend my dollar on that to rent it, and took it home and fell in love with it. So, there you go.
Yeah, I actually remember how I found it. Was I was already a Peter Falk fan. I was only, I think, 9 that year, so might have been 10 by the time it hit cable. I was already a Peter Falk fan because I liked Columbo. I thought Columbo was funny. And I was already as a huge wrestling fan. And back when, and this will blow kids' minds as much as the VHS thing, back when there was only one The Movie Channel on cable,
HBO.
And you actually had to pay money for The Movie Channel rather than getting 20 crappy ones for free. you had your choice. It was HBO, Cinemax, and Movie Channel, or Showtime. I can't remember which it was, Showtime or Cinemax. But those are the only three. We had the
Cinemax.
Movie
Channel. I believe Cinemax was first. But
yeah. We had the Movie Channel, and All the Marbles started playing on the Movie Channel for a month or so. Because they moved back in those days, Movie Channel would get the new release movie. It was kind of like, now, you know, kind of like Video On Demand does it now. Eventually it hits, and it was big on the channel for a month. And that's when it hit Movie Channel. I hadn't heard about it when it was in the theaters, but I'm sitting at home, and they're running like their little mini trailer ads. And, you know, Peter Falk and this person and this person and this person wrestling All the Marbles up next. And I was like, ooh, okay. And so I started watching it from there.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I'm not completely sure, because I know for a fact that I watched it on HBO about 100 million times.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that I first saw, because I remember that that cover of that VHS. So I obviously seen it. So I'm pretty sure the first time was with VHS. But boy, I mean, there's just so many different reasons to watch it. But there's Peter Falk doing his thing. There's Burt Young being a total sleazeball.
Oh yeah,
one of the best adult out of that. And then you had girls wrestling, and then actually breasts showing. And what more is a 15-year-old, or actually that I was 18-year-old guy going to do? I just watched that movie over and over again. And the wrestling was good.
Wrestling was okay.
Good for movies. That's for
The last match was actually really good, but we'll get to that. But yeah, I mean, I think for the I think this movie is a good sign of the times too. when you look at some of the things, like, I mean, I don't know that they portray things in the best light. Wrestling. We should first say that this movie is straight up like wrestling is real.
Yes.
And completely serious kayfabe. And everything. So that it makes it weird to watch in a way because, you know, you've got the sleazy promoter with Burt Young from the Rocky movies. And so it makes it a little weird. And you've got Peter Falk like trying to make deals but Peter Falk was great and obviously the star of this movie.
Well, one of the things... Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. It does make a little sense that that's how it was portrayed, though, because it came out in the 80s. It was probably starting its development in the late 70s, so it was still just beating Vince McMahon's, hey, it's all a work announcement going wide by a few years. So, it makes sense, and I mean, as a piece of fiction, you know, it's like you can, I can watch like crappy B movies with gigantic lizards in it. And I can accept, you know, wrestling is real in that. So,
sure.
Well, one of the things though I was going to say is that, and I got reminded of it. I had forgotten about it really, which had been a long time since I actually got to see it again. But there is a scene in there where they definitely kind of do kayfabe a little bit, or at least the idea that not all the matches are legitimate when the Tigers
were supposed to win.
The Tigers were saying they were, you know, they were supposed to win. So,
of course, then the manager says, "Ain't nobody's supposed to win."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and even the first match, so at the very beginning of the movie, like the. It still kind of portrayed it as like a work because they were in the same dressing room, like after the match when they beat the other tag team, they were in the same dressing rooms and they were like, good match. And like, so it was weird. Like it kind of started off that it wasn't real. So it was,
I don't know. One of the interesting things to me about when I learned more about the movie later was I was thinking that it was maybe written by somebody who had a lot more knowledge about some of the wrestling because of like just screwball odd things on the road. What I used to think, which, you know, later when I looked at it was more like any struggling, you know, rock band.
Yeah.
You could basically put them into the same road stuff. So that wasn't so much into that. Then you start trying to work out the other stuff. And finally, one time the writer, Mel Froman, Freeman.
I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yeah. This was apparently like his first writing gig. This was his first credited script.
Right.
And if you see the rest of his very short and best left unremarked writing career, it's not a lot of really good movies. It's a lot of movies where, if you've ever seen any of them, there are a lot of logical gaps in almost everything he writes. And I don't think he intended to do that. And when we look at it with that eye of the hardcore wrestling fans we've been, It looks like, were they trying to do this or were they trying to do that? And in all honesty, looking at it now, knowing what I know about his career, he just didn't. I think what he was trying to do was make everybody look like, oh, you know, good sports. It's all sporting. Yes, congratulations. Hey, it's all good. We had a good competition type. But it just, he didn't quite have the ability to pull that off.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's probably true. The main story is them, you know, their struggles to you know, and their trips on the roads and so forth. Like you said, there's lots of different occupations that could fit that. He just decided, well, And I'm sure that there's no question that the success of Rocky was part of the reason why they chose In the Ring. And they went with wrestling and female tag team wrestling and so on and so forth. And that's how it went.
Female boxing wouldn't have gone over as well.
No. And you know, and they had, some others had tried wrestling too. It wasn't all boxing, because even Stallone did Paradise Alley. So wrestling, just any kind of ring sport, whatever. But
so you're the sixth person I know that actually knows that film. Okay.
Oh yeah, I love Paradise Alley. Terry Funk's in it. What are you kidding? Anything Terry Funk does is okay with me. I mean, Vicky Fedrick and Lorraine Landon certainly are very lovely young women. Really an interesting thing, because I really was surprised that Vicky didn't have more of a career. She was really a pretty good actress and just gorgeous brunette. Lorraine Landon actually had...
She had Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town. Do not slag on Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town. I will get Joe Crow on you.
No. I'm not saying. I'm just saying that she doesn't have as many credits as Lorraine did. You know, the blonde, Molly.
Yeah, honestly, that kind of surprises me too. Yeah. You see, her acting career just sort of ends.
Well, I think part of that is that she really wasn't dedicated to being a movie actress, because she was also on Broadway as a dancer. Matter of fact, she was Bob Fosse's favorite dancer. So, which probably the reason why that she looked pretty good in the ring, since she was already, you know, probably, you know, a dancer. That's pretty good leg up on doing the stuff in the ring. Yeah. Which, by the way, we should point out that they were trained by the one and only Mildred Burke, which I discussed on our first episode of our three-part show about the lady women wrestlers. One of the great legends of the ring, the one that trained Fabulous Moolah, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
She actually trained all the girls in the movie to give the semblance of at least half-assed good-looking matches.
Yeah. And that's one thing, is much like I kind of picked on the wrestling earlier. That's one thing that, you know, I kind of give them credit for, which was, this was a bunch of actresses who, if you looked at their resume, most of them were not getting roles where they were known for, you know, being physical, being butt kickers, doing all sorts of like wild, wild stuff. But they did not use stunt doubles in this film. If you see the girls wrestling in the ring, that's girls wrestling in the ring. Yep. They're doing it as best as they can. And, a lot of people speak very fondly of GLOW, and they're probably at GLOW level wrestling.
I was about to say, they're as good as the diva era of WWE, I think. Yeah. So. Kelly, you're better than Kelly.
They're better than the diva era of wrestling. I'll give them that.
there's that. But, I mean, one of the things I really like, speaking of the in-ring stuff, seeing some, you know, the kind of moves and stuff that they don't do anymore in today's wrestling. You know, there was several different little, you know, things they did that you just don't see them, you know, as much or at all in wrestling today. And it was just nice to see them, you know.
You mean the sunset flip?
The sunset flip.
Throughout the entire movie, so you knew it was going to be the way
exactly.
It ended.
Yeah, exactly. They telegraphed that one. It was like, bam! Telegraph, bam, bam! Okay, but now that and a couple others, like some of the flips and stuff like that.
The spin into the backbreaker.
Yeah.
Loved, they actually pulled that off really well, and it looked like it should have killed her, and it wasn't because they did it sloppy. They did it right. It looked it should have killed her.
Yeah, and we're getting a couple of stuff like that back. Putting the girl on the turnbuckles and slamming in her stomach. I've seen Alexa do that. I think Alexa has brought back the standing on the hair and pulling up. That was a classic.
Even the one, and I watched it earlier just to to get it fresh in my head again. It was one of the things I realized. I used to see this more on televised wrestling, and you don't anymore. As much as they basically have thrown out, oh, you know, the thing of, oh, he's holding the ropes or he's in the ropes. The one bit where she's holding on the one of the dolls is holding on to the bottom rope, yeah, and one of the tigers has her legs and is like basically flipping her up and down like a rope until, yes, she finally lets go and slams her back.
Yes.
That, you used to see that even back in the kayfabe days. You, yeah, used to see people, the heels would do that more, yep, and it looks like it hurts.
Yes, vicious.
And you don't see it anymore.
I agree. I liked it when they get vicious and the heels get vicious. And also the kind of sale where, you know, the blonde's is laying on the ring, bottom ring rope like she's dead, you know. Just kind of, you know, sagging on the rope and just, you know, not moving like she's, you know, just been, you know, done, you know. It's just great psychology, great imagery. It's just, I miss that sort of stuff. Anyway, go ahead, Richard, say something. You're being too quiet.
Just listening to y'all talk. You know,
it works like, when you're too quiet. It's like you're probably over there, you know, just cutting up pictures of Oscar and Renee Young.
I'm writing articles about my hatred for them. No. No, yeah, I mean, I thought for the most part the wrestling was good, and the mud wrestling scene, you know, I mean, I went into this movie thinking it wasn't R for some reason, and it clearly is. even though back in the day around this time, I mean, what, R didn't really start till 70s, any late 70s anyway. So, you know, I watched Logan's Run as a G movie, you know. I'm just saying, there is a totally, well, yep, naked female in that movie.
Yeah, there is. Yes, there is. Well, I'll never forget it.
I know, right? I mean, like, but different time. Yes. And, I mean, that was a completely innocent scene in Logan's
Honestly,
Run.
I guarantee you, I think there are, if it wasn't the few scenes of the breast with the violence of the ring, I don't think it would have got an R.
I
think it was
a
combination of the two.
I feel that if the only scene was in there was the very, like, towards the beginning, I think it was the first scene where you do see boobs, where, yeah, the girl is in Harry's dressing or in a,
right,
motel,
where it's
room,
obviously a sexual thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
but she just come out and she's just
standing
there.
She's just coming out
naked,
just naturally.
She
was bathing. She was clean.
Yeah, I feel like if that was the only scene, that it may not have. But
yeah,
this was the beginning of the R.
Yeah, and to be truthful, the mud wrestling did mix the violence with the boobs.
Oh, I mean that scene just set it over. Because at first I was like, oh, they're clothed, and then by the end of it, oh, they're not clothed.
Yeah,
no, they're not clothed at all. And you know, part of what I was saying before, where this didn't show people in the best of light, I'm not sure that it shows women in the best of light. In the, I mean, it does because they fight about the mud wrestling thing,
yeah,
about her being embarrassed and stuff like that. But he hits her and then she kisses him, and there's just very weird, like.
Well, that's one of the things I like about the movie.
It's a sign of the times. Yeah. It's a, yeah, sign, and I do believe it is a sign of the times for good,
well,
and bad.
Well, more than that, I think it's just a sign of reality. One of the things I like about the movie is it seems very real to me. That people aren't, you know, just one. It's not black and white. There's facets of people, and people have flaws. And it showed that all these characters have flaws. Even the total slime ball, you know, played by Burt Young, it wasn't entirely bad, you know. Pretty damn bad, but not entirely bad. But you know, the Bali had the, you know, pill problem, and obviously, you know, Vicky Fedrick's character Iris had some definite issues, you know, and it was very clear that, you know, she had some self-esteem issues and trouble with men and being, you know, you know, being willing to allow men to mistreat her or to use her body to get an accomplishment or whatever. Peter Falk, he cared about the girls, but he also could be, you know, duplicitous, and it could be, you know,
an
cheating
ass.
An ass, a total ass. And by the way, he did hit her, but she hit him later on too.
True. Actually, she hit him several
later,
times.
Yeah, later on.
Before.
I think that's a character arc. She got stronger as she went along. And when she did what she had to do, and she wasn't very proud of it, and he hit her, she hit him right back. And she did, and also important, she didn't sell the first that hit. She didn't sell it. She just like turned her head a little bit and looked right back at him and then slapped the hell out of him. And that was, I think, an actual growth in the character. And then Molly kicks the pills, and you know, yeah. Go ahead.
Plus, that is again, it was 1980. And again, like it's probably written, started production in probably late 70s, like 79. But that was one of those things. I think it really is that like generational thing, because there's a lot of films and even comedies. One of my favorite comedies of all time is a Cary Grant film called Father Goose. And there's a scene where he and Leslie Caron, it's like, you know, she smacks him. He looks at her for a second. He smacks her. She gets upset. She smacks him back. And then, like, the very next scene there at the headquarters, which won't make any sense if you've never seen the film, but basically it's somebody's going, you know, it's a call from and what is it? You know, oh, my God, he's killed her. And it's like, no, they want to get married. And it was, and you'd see it in all the, like the tough guy, down and dirty, gritty detective movies and everything. So I think it's generationally, it's one of those things of its time. And probably the writer had grown up on a lot of those types of films where it was, okay, you're a little dysfunctional and you're going to start screaming at each other and somebody's going to kind of that slap upside the cheek. Because when, clarifying for nobody who's ever seen it, it's not hit like he hauls back and punches her or knocks her. It's the stereotypical of that era. Someone is being hysterical, male or female, and it's slap upside the cheek, like knock them back into their
seats. Out of it.
And that's more. That's kind of what the scene was.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, whether that would fly these days, that's out the window.
A different thing.
But that's. I mean, generationally, that's where that film was. So.
Yes, indeed. A couple of little behind-the-scene things. I don't know whether you know these or not, Jerry. You probably do. That one of the actresses that actually auditioned but did not get a part was Kathleen Turner when she was young unknown. I mentioned Mildred Burke, but also according to Loring Landon, who played Molly, while the film did not perform really well in the United States, it actually made a big profit in foreign markets. And there was plans to do a sequel set in primarily in Japan, which, you know, there's a little bit at the beginning that kind of, you know, lays that seed. But the director, Robert Aldrich's death, put a kibosh on that. So,
yeah, I thought I didn't really know what the movie was about. I mean, so I thought that was a setup for the movie. So I was disappointed when it wasn't. But, yeah, if they were going to make a sequel, it makes sense. And y'all made great points about the generational thing. I mean, one of my favorite comedies is The Toy, so I know all about.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing it as a kid is much different than seeing it as an adult. Yeah. As an adult, I'm like, oh.
But,
but as a kid, I loved it. I mean.
You mentioned Robert Aldrich, and that's, you know, we were talking about, you know, there were a few other, you know, wrestling movies at Paradise Alley, and then the ones that we've discussed before, you know, Roddy Piper and Tonga Kid and all the guys doing those, or the one woman's wrestling movie that's like completely not kayfabe and depressing as hell. And I want to say the name is called Below the Belt or something. It's about this woman who's like learning to wrestle, and eventually she takes on the champ and wins the belt, and it's got some of the most depressing bits in it.
Really?
But all of these are all these like smaller movies. This was, you know, the writer was no one to speak of, but they gave it to Robert Aldrich, who was, you know, 10 Seconds to Hell, Kiss Me Deadly, Hustle, right. Flight of the Phoenix, right. The Dirty Dozen, Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte, The Longest Yard.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And they expected this to be bigger, I think, than it was.
Oh, yeah.
So,
absolutely. That's true. Yeah, great director, and unfortunately passed away pretty soon after the movie came out. It was his last movie. Also, since the Pro Wrestling Roundtable is now an international show, I behoove me to tell all of our non-American people that may be listening that outside of the U.S., if you're wanting to look for this movie in whatever source you've got, you may be able to find it under the California Dolls, which is what it's called in foreign markets.
More sense.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
yeah.
They say All the Marbles at the very end of the movie, but yeah. It's still a weird title.
By the way, I have to point out, as a old 60s sitcom devotee, that I was delighted always that the fact that Frank Duvall did the music for this movie. you saw his name on the credits of every episode of My Three Sons very prominently. So, yeah.
But
go ahead. Good.
Okay. Despite all of its flaws, and you referenced this earlier, and I think I said the same thing when I first brought it up when we were talking about the WCW movie. It seems like what they were trying to do was do a female tag team wrestling version of Rocky.
Oh yeah,
no and it's—I mean, it's down and dirty, and to the point that I don't know that they cast him because of his association with Rocky, but Burt Young was in Rocky.
Yeah, he was.
But then Burt Young was in practically everything else. I think if you look on his IMDb, when it like most people have number of roles, 120. I think his just is we quit trying to keep up.
Right. Maybe not near the level of John Carradine, but enough to where that's not even bother. Go ahead.
But the whole kind of we're at the absolute bottom. I mean, they start him out.
Yeah.
They start him out the first two matches we see. They've started out in an arena that makes the old WTBS Saturday Night look like Madison Square Gardens.
Yes.
And slowly they get bigger. And then they have that. And even kind of the sidestep when they go to the dinky little stupid carnival with of all people, if you were a child of the 70s, you're looking at this guy and all you can think of the guy that was like the dorky guy talking to him.
Yeah, yeah.
All you can think is that the guy from Jason? That's the scientist from Jason of Star Command. which was all I could think when I first saw that film. Every time I saw it, that was all I could think of. But they go on that side venture, and even the side venture with this, we don't want to do the mud wrestling, but it's all about we're on the bottom, but. If we can show people this contract, they might not ever know about the mud wrestling, but $500, we can now show people we have a contract, $500, and that's our price. And it's all that slow build up, meeting and beating the Tigers the first time, and then being able to play the grudge match and having the giant match in Reno, and all the and again 1980. All the pomp and so they didn't do anything near what we think of as man, that's great wrestling production value.
Yeah.
But 1980, and here's a wrestling movie, and they're coming out, and it's like, we're the California Dolls, we're going to specifically, I want you to play this music specifically. Yeah. You're going to come out, and then, oh, you beautiful dolls, and they're wearing the elaborate
being carried out by big bodybuilders,
being carried out like. These bodybuilders with their on their shoulders being carried out like Egyptian royalty. They've got quote the WrestleMania celebrity, the guest ring announcer.
Yep.
Mean Joe Green.
Way before the Hulk Hogan and Vince Jr. And even really before, the Freebirds did it on a national level with the World Class when it was syndicated. They were doing some of that stuff. As far as their big entrance and so on and so forth, at house show or not, but not on television, but, you know, in major shows and arenas in Louisiana and then later Georgia, but nothing like this, you know, so to this level, you know, except for maybe the Superdome shows or something, but.
So
it was not well known or an associated thing with wrestling, except for those who remember Gorgeous George, maybe. Yeah.
And did you catch the line when you rewatched it recently? Did you catch the line? Peter Falk, Harry, makes it when he's got he's given him the bags of the costume, and he basically says, "Yeah, George got nothing on this.
George got nothing on this." Yes, I did catch that. Yes. That was great, great. So obviously that was where the writer was getting it was, you know, Gorgeous George, and that's great. That was fantastic, and just this, and a great climax for the film. It really built. By the way, let's, you know, mention Tracy Reed and I'm drawing a blank on her name, but the other girl that played the Tigers, they were great as antagonists.
I can remember her last name is Bryant. The first name is something like Ursulin. I should have brought that. Hang on a second. Yep. Okay. I just pulled it up. Her name is Ursulin Bryant.
Ursulin
she
Bryant.
She played June, and Tracy was Diane.
Yes.
And John Hancock as their manager.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. John.
And I mean, because the whole movie, I'm like, I know this guy. And then looking at his IMDb, he was everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All of them were. Yeah. The referee in Reno was Richard Jekyll, who's like.
Yeah.
Was a huge character actor.
That's right. Yes.
Everywhere.
Oh, and by the way, because he's such a good character actor, I loved his facials and stuff in the ring, and when they were throwing the shit out of him, I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it. It was great. You know, there's where you're totally where it's a work because, you know, he was allowing it to happen instead of disqualifying him. So.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking the whole time too. I was like, I don't understand.
And I mean. And one of the things, the announcer in Reno, which was, you know, Chick Hearn, who was like one of the huge TV report play-by-play sportscasters of the day.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, very true.
Also, I want to point out this movie includes the most shots of a driving car with talking. That I've ever seen in my entire life.
Hey, I told you that back when.
I was just like, how many scenes of the car are we going to see with them talking outside? Like, it's just a weird. And a line that Harry had some great lines. Peter Falk really is the best part of the movie. I mean, his character is complex in a way, you know, as the points you've mentioned, but one of my favorite things was at the very beginning, one of the girls flips somebody off and he says, I didn't know you were bilingual.
Yeah. He had great lines. He really did. Yes, he did.
Which apparently on IMDb, it says that, Paul Newman was originally written for the, was.
Yes. Yeah. I heard that. Part. Yeah.
Probably a much different movie if he was.
I can't see Paul Newman feeling as right.
No.
Testing.
Peter was perfect for this sort of, you know, fly-by-night, sleazy,
lovable
manager, lovable. Yeah.
Not even the whole role. I mean, I just can't feel him in that role in general, but specifically just the kind of casual way. I've always wanted a Mercedes.
I was giving it
a stress test.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That was a great scene. I love awesome. That scene.
Great stuff. Well, we're almost out of time. We're coming up on learning out of time, and I don't want to skip out on the fact that the wonderful support work in the small role that Faith Minton played as Big Mama and Stanley Brock as her manager. She was fantastic. I loved freaking Big Mama. She was so great with her, you know, way her reactions, and then in the end, she was rooting for the dolls too. It was.
What do you think of me in a wet T-shirt?
Right.
I'm working on it.
that's just the one point in the movie where you actually feel sorry for Burt Young. But and this is just because I have a little bit of OCD. The only thing that bugged me is that we didn't get to see Superstar.
Yeah,
I was hoping, always hoping that the posters downstairs would have done it, you know, and the two there, but they didn't do it. So now I'll never know what Superstar looked like.
Part of me, like, Big Mama is great, and it really makes you kind of want to see a movie of her own, you know? I almost think that this movie might have worked better, not a tag team, but, I mean, I guess it would have been too blasphemy. Much Rocky-like.
Oh, know? We've stopped talking now. This is, I'm pulling the plug on this son of a bitch.
I know your love of tag
my tag team.
But it,
right, go ahead, you know, go ahead. Make your point.
It is for a little odd choice to go to the tag team route if they were trying to be more like Rocky, but I get and not make it like a Big Mama the star. But I guess you don't want to copy it so much, you know. And tag teams were big at that time. So.
That's what I say. Tag teams was the thing, and it was even particularly the thing with a lot of the female wrestling, particularly in Japan. So, tag teams was the way to go, I think. But then again, I'm a little prejudiced about that. But
a little.
A little bit. Hey, one of the reasons that I love the SummerSlam so much is that we had two incredible freaking tag team matches, and really not a bad six-man match at the beginning. So I'm a happy man right now. And a great one at NXT with Sanity winning. So, and we're getting this influx of more teams, and Red Dragon's now in there. And
tag teams are certainly way better now than they were, 7 years ago?
The talent's there. And they're not booking some of those great because I don't like what they're doing with Anderson Gallows, which right now is basically nothing. Unfortunately, the Revival keep getting hurt, which is not good. But we've got a great deal of talent of dedicated people who are wanting to be tag team wrestlers and not wanting just to use it as a stepping stone to whatever. So now all they need to do is book it a little better and present them as a bigger deal. You know, present the world tag team titles as just right below the world title or the women's title and above the IC and US title.
An all tag team pay-per-view.
They could hire Mel Froman as a creative team member. I don't think he's doing anything these days.
There you go.
Well, and women's wrestling is at the height of it. So it's interesting that this film, you know, showcases that, and you know, it didn't really have a play on us reviewing this movie. It's all Jerry's fault. I mean, it's all Jerry's suggestion. But and I want to thank Jerry. He is the reason I own this movie. So thank you, sir. That was a nice Christmas gesture last year.
You're welcome.
I had to stream it.
So, yeah, the movie is available on DVD and maybe Blu-ray, but I know DVD, it's pretty cheap, too.
It's also available, like, on every one of the major streaming things for $2.99.
Amazon
or Google Play or whatever.
I mean, I would say if you're, you know, if you want to watch there are a ton of movies based on wrestling that I've never heard of and that a lot of people have never heard of. I mean, heck, we just found out about that Glow movie from Christy Petrillo.
That's right. I had no idea it existed.
Yeah, I had no. I own it now. I haven't watched it yet, but I bought it online for $7. So
the Glow movie? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's what was it called, John? Blood by Baptism.
Baptism. Is that it?
Angels of hold on.
Oh, wait, is it American Angels?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. I think that's American Angels, Blood by Baptism.
Yeah, I remember that was actually, I think they were making that in the 90s, and all the wrestling magazines, a bunch of them, were promoting the crap out of it because it was going to be like the big thing, and then it just disappeared. I don't think it ever got a release.
Yeah.
And then recently I just saw that somebody's somehow pulled it out and they started selling it online.
Yeah,
It's American Angels Baptism of Blood, 1989.
With like Magnificent Mimi and a bunch of others. Because Because I think they even like leveraged a Playboy spread, like the before the WWF did, like, you know, started hooking up with Playboy. Mm-hmm. There was like one time they did this Playboy spread in the like 80s or early 90s, and like half the people that were associated with this film, I think it was supposed to be some sort of tie-in promotion, and then like the film never appeared. And then I saw something just recently, like suddenly it's available. I'm like, okay.
Right.
Yeah, that might be something we look into maybe doing too, getting Chris back on the show. Because I'm interested in watching these wrestling movies that I've never seen. And I even want to, because, you know, when you say wrestling movies, people automatically think No Holds Barred. I swear that's what everybody thinks of. But, you know.
A lot of people do these days. Why should you think of the wrestler? Because, you know,
that's true. Well, as far as wrestling fans, I think they think of No Holds Barred. I think more.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
I know. I'm not sure. But I like doing these. I'd love to watch Body Slam. That's a movie that I kind of remember, but I kind of don't, too.
I want to have a discussion about Wrestling Queen 1973.
Well, maybe we definitely want to do more of these.
Which is available on YouTube, by the way. So it's easily watched and so on and so forth. Do you know that one, Jerry? Have you ever watched it?
It sounds familiar.
It's actually a documentary. Originally, it was just going to be an overall documentary about the wrestling scene in 1973. Because this actually has Andre before he was Andre. You know,
oh, wow.
And lots of other famous wrestlers there in the Midwest and the other, but for whatever reason, for good reasons, the guy that made the film decided to focus on Vivian Vachon and really follow
her. I did not remember it.
Which for
the name, but why
actually
you
for the for the
her?
Same reason that All the Marbles works. It just follows her as she works in the territories and so on and so forth, and trying to do well and so on and so forth. And the song that actually is the theme song for the movie really tells the story of the struggles of a wrestler trying to make it succeed and going from town to town and all this, that, and the other and so on and so forth. So. It just always resonated with me, and I love that song, which we used for
has been on the show.
Yes, so. Yeah, we used it for the female wrestling trio. But anyway, so there you go. I think we have to quit now. So anyway, this was a fascinating discussion. Thank you once again, Jerry, and thank you for the suggestion to begin with, and thank you for joining us and giving us some insight. And for now, we're going to say goodbye, and we hope everybody's well out there. Right away, get well soon, Ric Flair. We 100% support you. We hope that you kick out very soon and that you come back as strong as possible when it's all said and done. So that's a good thing. So, and get well soon, Oscar, and get well soon, Cass. And so anyway, goodbye, everybody. Have a good night.
Woo!
Woo!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.